Taz and Moose. You know it's Taz and Moose. Hey.
855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227.
Attention, Hotline fans.
Thank you, Mean Gene. It's Taz and the Moose. Taz is off here on this Wednesday morning. Bogish is in the house. As we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios, who found a better way to mortgage so you can focus on making your new house home? Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Coming up later on this hour, Andrew and myself will be chatting with Dennis Dodd. Talk a little college football. Why not? It's that time of year, obviously, as we're winding down the college football season here well into the month of November, or into the month of November. Really the last month of the college football regular season before we get to all the postseason shenanigans and all the bowls and everything like that. And that brings us to the three. What do you need to know on this Wednesday morning? Here you go.
It is now time for the three. We get you caught up on the three biggest headlines of the day with Taz and the Moose. Number one.
The initial college football playoff rankings are released.
They are number one, Ohio State. Number two, LSU. Number three, Alabama. Number four, Penn State. Number five, the Clemson Tigers. Those are your top five teams when you look at the initial college football rankings that came out last night. When you look at strength of record, LSU is the number one strength of record. Ohio State, three. Alabama, four. Penn State, two. Clemson, eight. Interesting when you look at what comes out now. Listen, the national semifinals are not getting set this week. It's the first rankings that do come out. I do think they got it right. I think we can nitpick and talk about, which we did earlier on, Andrew, in terms of three and four. But I do think, personally, I think Ohio State's the best team in the country. I know you would have gone LSU as number one in the college football playoff rankings. I would have went Ohio State. I think they're the most balanced, all-around, best football team in college football. However, I can understand the love that you have for LSU.
Yeah, and at the moment, one and two is basically interchangeable, so there's no shame in being number two. I would have also put Clemson at number four, or at least had Penn State at number three based on the logic that the committee gave us last night. And I think that's kind of, with list number one of five of four selections, we were trying to get a handle on how they're going to process teams this year. And as we laid out back in hour number one, it was odd to me and others that Clemson loses out to Penn State because of their head-to-head resume kind of comparison, but Alabama beats Penn State in the eye test, even though Alabama's resume is no better, if not worse, than what Clemson's resume is in terms of who they play, the quality of their opponents. They basically share the same best win, which is Texas A&M, which is not the same win that people thought it was going to be when the year began. So, you know, it's a little concerning moving forward if you're a team behind Alabama and you want to get past them. You know, how much extra love they're going to get from this committee for being Alabama. It certainly has helped them in this initial list, and it's going to until the committee has no other choice moving forward based on actual results.
Yeah, right, and they're going to get, obviously, a stiff test this weekend. Right. Alabama-LSU 3:30 kickoff. That's going to be a fun one. Ohio State-Penn State play in, 3 weeks, I believe it is, right? November 23rd?
Right. Yeah.
I believe it is second to last college football weekend.
Because then Ohio State has Michigan.
Correct, and Penn State closes out the year at home against?
Couldn't tell you. Rutgers.
Correct. That is right.
Are they going to play that game? Because sometimes at the end of the year...
Stop. They are going to play that game. At the end of the year, what? Teams put...
Season's over. Let's not... You know, nothing can change. Let's not even bother.
Right. Rutgers closes out the season with a nice trio. Ohio State, Michigan State, Penn State. That's a tough trio.
They're already losing by multiple touchdowns.
Someone was asking me the line at SNY yesterday because they know I do Rutgers football.
Infinity.
They asked, what do you think the line against Ohio State is? Do you think it's going to be over 50? I said, I would lay the line probably at 47.5.
My goodness. Will Rutgers have hired Greg Schiano by the time that game is played?
He's interviewing.
I know.
This week. I mean, they're having a sit down. I think there's a possibility he could already be in place by then, yes.
Okay.
I think there's a possibility. I don't know anything. I'm not telling you anything that I've great. You know, I'm not part of the inner circle, but
let
I think
update
there's
my update. CBS Sports Radio's Moose reporting.
Yes, exactly
that-
right. Yeah, break that news. Yes, here we go. Here's Rob Mullins on Clemson out, Penn State in, and the discussion between 4 and 5. Take a listen.
Obviously, a very good team. You know, undefeated for sure. But when you look at them relative to the people that were kind of in the same range, particularly Penn State, who's right above them, you know, Penn State has marquee wins against Michigan and at Iowa. And for the committee, that was a separator. Two very, very, very good teams. But those two marquee wins were a separator.
All right. What about how they rank teams? Take a listen.
We start with a clean sheet of paper from week zero of the 2019 season through week 10 of the 2019 season. We don't look at past seasons. We don't look at preseason. We look at week zero to week 10, and we do not look forward. And when we come back next week, it'll be with a completely clean sheet of paper.
Now, Mullins also wants to tell you that they debate, you know, 1 and 2 just as much as they debate 24 and 25.
A lot of attention gets paid in 1 through 4 or 1 through 6. But for our committee, we understand the importance of each and every ranking. So at just about every phase, and remember, we've talked about this in past years, you know, you do these in rounds, right? So we have 7 rounds where we break this down into smaller pieces. And there's a lot of debate within those rounds because you put teams into a pool, then you put their resumes on a board, and you have a lot of debate. So there's plenty of debate. Again, tomorrow morning, you'll read a lot about, you know, Ohio State and LSU because of where they are in the rankings, or Clemson and Penn State because of where they are in the rankings. But we're debating 21, 22, 24, 25 because we understand the importance of those programs as well.
Bogus, let me ask you right now.
Please.
Look at the top 10.
Okay.
You know, of your list, right?
Uh-huh.
Look at the top 10 rankings.
Mm-hmm.
How deep do you think playoff contention goes?
In terms of quality of team or actual pathway to get in?
Pathway to get in. How many teams do you think are in the discussion from your mind that you think can make it to the national semifinals?
I probably could stretch to Baylor just because they haven't lost a game yet this year. But then you throw like Minnesota in there because Minnesota's got Penn State coming up this weekend. And they beat Penn State this weekend. That changes their dynamic. But, you know, but they also have Oregon and Utah who probably cancel each other out at some point. So that's all, they're kind of like one entry together on this list coming out of the Pac-12. Auburn's got Alabama coming up, so a chance to boost their resume. So like somewhere between 10 and 12 teams.
You think 10 and 12 teams? I think you're probably right. I think you're probably right in terms of contention. You know, Baylor obviously has to remain undefeated. Oh, you know, Oregon being in the mix. You mentioned Oregon and Utah, Georgia, Clemson, Penn State, Alabama, LSU, Ohio State. Obviously, we all know what their paths are in order to get themselves into it. I think it's intriguing, fascinating. I also think it's also refreshing that we're having some new names into the discussion. And Alabama and Clemson certainly deserve their respect. And as we mentioned earlier, Dabo Sweeney is going to look at this as a sign of disrespect, the fact that they're 5 and they're not 4 or 3 in these initial college football rankings. But as long as they remain undefeated, I think everything will take care of itself. I think they will. I have a hard time envisioning an undefeated Clemson team being on the outside looking in. That's not happening.
Yeah, and I want to see if Oregon gets to the end with still only one loss.
That, you know, one loss being Auburn. And the game they should have won.
Right, or could have won.
Could have won.
And, you know, the Pac-12 has been banging the drum for respect and love. And, you know, what do you do then with Oregon? And it's, you know, so many of these paths interchange. It's kind of hard to, or intersect, I should say. It's kind of hard to separate them because when you push one team forward, it's often at the detriment of another. You know, like, again, with Penn State and Ohio State, like, Penn State technically is obviously very much involved right now, but they haven't played Ohio State yet. And then if they lose, well, first they got to play Minnesota this weekend, so they could be out of this conversation within 2 weeks.
Yes,
depending on how things go. But I, you know, to go back to your question, I think there's a, you know, somewhere between 9, 10, 11, 12 teams that at least have a, are on life support when it comes to a playoff spot.
All right, next.
Number 2.
Cam Newton placed on injured reserve.
Yeah, and as we discussed a little bit earlier, last hour, Andrew, in all likelihood, I mean, his Panther career is going to come to an end. You know, that it will be. It is Kyle Allen, obviously, moving forward for the 2019 season, but it could be 2019 and beyond. They got Will Grier, the young quarterback out of West Virginia, in that quarterback's room as well. Newton has been a legendary Panther. There's no doubt about it. I think they're ready to move on. He's clearly a case where he cannot stay healthy. He had a lot of success, 2015 NFL MVP, not all that long ago, as we're sitting here in the 2019 NFL regular season. He's just not been able to stay healthy. Now, you and I are a little bit of a disagreement in terms of Cam's future. We both agree that he's going to play. Just what caliber of player is Cam Newton going to be when he resurfaces in the NFL in 2020?
Cam has had a better career than he probably gets credit for. He has his detractors. I guess he opens, it's not, I don't say this to fault him, but I mean, he opens the door for people to be stupid about the way he plays, and maybe because they don't like his personality, it leads them to say or kind of dismiss what he does on the field. But he's a Hall of Fame talent in this game. He's not a Hall of Famer, but no one has ever existed in the NFL before like Cam Newton. Size, skill, position. And yeah, I do think it'd be a debate. It's not an easy thing. It's not a blank check thing. But if I needed a quarterback this offseason and the Panthers have cut him and I'm not in a position to draft somebody, if I think I need to have somebody step in right away and play, I don't have time for development, or I don't have the picks to actually get one of these young guys, I would sign Cam Newton. I think if he's healthy, there's two or three seasons of him being an above-average quarterback left in that body.
And I thought you brought up a great team, the Chicago Bears. Got a great defense.
One for one.
You know, I got a great defense. Trubisky's an absolute dumpster fire at the quarterback spot. He's not the solution there and steps into a scenario where he does not need to be great in order for that team to be great.
You know, it's funny, and the way my brain has worked with Trubisky, when I watched a lot of their game this weekend, and it was a disaster. When I watch him struggle and I hear people talking about how bad he's been and how inept their offense is, my brain flashes to Mike Glennon, who had just signed with the Bears. Then they move up to pick Trubisky. They didn't have to move up to take him there, but the look on Glennon's face of what just happened to me, that's my first thought. It's never the guys like Patrick Mahomes who were then taken after Trubisky, but that's the real thing here. The Bears took, there were three quarterbacks that take in that spot, and the Bears took the third one, the worst one, by an ocean.
True.
And it's just, it's going to be a bad, bad pick, and maybe they figure things out, but they are a mess right now, and I share your lack of confidence in him becoming anything close to an elite quarterback and making that anything close to an elite offense in Chicago.
No, he's not going to be able to do that. All right, number three.
Number three.
Chargers owner Dean Spanos denies team wants to leave L.A.
Yes, here he is, the Chargers owner, yesterday on the rumors and the report from The Athletic that the Chargers and the NFL seriously considering moving that team to London. Take a listen.
I know there's been a lot of crap going around in the last 24 hours about this London thing, and I just want to give you a quote from me, okay? It's total.
Okay. That's a quote.
We're not going to London. We're not going anywhere. We're playing in Los Angeles. This is our home, and this is where we're planning to be for a long time. Okay. Period. Okay? And if you want me to say it again, I'll
Please.
Say it again.
Yes, thank you.
That story.
Yes.
Okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
I can't get past anywheres.
Yes.
No adult should say anywheres.
No, I agree with you.
Does he also say supposedly?
No, he does not.
He might.
He might. Well, I have not heard him say supposedly, so maybe he does say supposedly.
I mean, if you're going with anywheres, supposedly is on the table.
Now, a couple of things to unpack here. Obviously, he's bothered by it. It affects the overall interest in the Chargers. If people feel like they're one step out the door and they're going to be heading over to London, the Chargers in Los Angeles for the NFL has been an unmitigated disaster. They are playing road games even when they're home, just outside the Los Angeles area. So that's been a problem. They couldn't force a stadium down the residents' throats down in San Diego, so that was not going to happen. And this has been a problem. Now, the thing is that it gets out. Maybe it was just an initial precursory conversation or cursory conversation here, Andrew, and there was really not much to it. That's why Spanos is so upset. Maybe there's more to it. That's why Spanos is upset. Maybe he's upset this story gets out because, as you mentioned, Pro Football Talk brought up a number of different reasons, whether a relationship with the Rams, the Jaguars, in terms of why this all of a sudden gets out there, because it obviously hurts the Los Angeles Chargers. I do think this. Maybe it's not the Chargers. There will be an NFL franchise in London within the next 10 years. I think there's too much heat to it. And the NFL is pushing too hard for it. And there's too big of a revenue stream to think that it's not going to happen.
Yeah, you know, I keep going back to the level of anger in the Dean Spanos clip we just played. And it doesn't sound like fake anger. It doesn't sound like tough guy routine, even though he sounds like a tough guy. Like, I don't think he's making that up. And I'm trying to figure out why he's angry. I guess he could be just insulted that someone would throw out the idea of his team not going to their, you know, staying in their beautiful home of Los Angeles. But maybe he is mad that a private conversation got leaked to the media.
Yeah.
And that's why he's pissed. And that's why, and he turns that anger into such a strong denial of the possibility of being in London. Maybe they're already going to London.
Maybe they are. I don't think the Chargers are going to London. Do you?
I mean, I don't. But I do, like I said, I keep getting stuck on why he's so angry about that story.
I think it's more so the former than the latter.
I mean, he told me to do naughty things to the article. That seems like a lot.
Correct. He did do that. I think he's more bothered by maybe the fact that, okay, it's almost like I get a sense it's almost like someone floated the idea to him and he thought about it. It's like, no, we're happy here in Los Angeles. And then all of a sudden that story gets out that they've had these conversations. He's like, wait a second.
Right.
I gave that little to know. I'm not moving to Los Angeles. You guys are making this out to be more than it is. We're not going to London.
Because they did then technically talk about it, even though the conversation was like, stop, leave me alone. We're not going there.
Right. Exactly right. I mean, you know, it's like, it's almost like when you're, you know, about to, you know, have your fourth or fifth child and you have a conversation, you're like, your wife's like, then someone's like, oh, they're about to have another baby. Wait, hold on a second. I never said that. I'm not having another child.
That's what you guys need, by the way.
Another child.
Another kid.
Yes, of
no,
course.
No desire for a girl to throw in the mix there?
Yeah, there's been those conversations.
Yeah, really?
Yes, of course. Yeah, we've had them.
I think we've officially moved on in the Bogish household.
Oh, you have. You're not going to pull a Monzo. You're not going to go for 8, 7.
No, we are certainly not going to go for 7 or 8 or 9, whatever Monzo. I think they're going to go until they can't anymore.
No, Brian Monzo, for those that don't know, produces the Mike Francesa show.
While he can.
WFAN in New York. For the next month.
Right.
Until Mike is off to radio.com, as he announced yesterday. So there you have it. Your three stories here on this Wednesday morning. We'll come back. We'll talk a little college football. Dennis Dodd will join Andrew and myself. It's a Wednesday morning. Good morning, everybody. CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Ah, yes, it is. A little Limp Bizkit bringing us out. 855-212-4227 on a Wednesday morning. Bogish is in the house, in for Taz, who's off here on this Wednesday. Hopefully, he'll be back with us tomorrow morning. As Taz and the Moose take you Monday through Friday right here on CBS Sports Radio, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Remember, download that podcast each and every day. Radio.com, Apple Podcast, and Stitcher. And I'm glad. Thank you for all the tweets. I'm glad that everyone loved my washing machine catching on fire story, which was big with the podcast audience. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. The electrical fire, it's still sitting in my yard on the
smoldering.
Porch. Thank God it's out. There's no fire. Thank you to the Stanford Fire Department for putting that out. And that's all done, all well and done. And hopefully we'll have a new washing machine tomorrow. That's the goal. Bogish, how are you?
Moose, I'm well. So here's the good news for Ohio State.
Okay.
They are number one in the initial college football playoff
rankings.
Always
going to be number one.
For the first time in program history.
We all know what that feels like.
This is the bad news. No team that started number one has gone on to win the national title. Now, that only dates back to 2014, but history is history, and that's what Ohio State will try and change this year. The Buckeyes followed by LSU, Alabama, and Penn State. Unbeaten Clemson left out at the moment at number 5. Minnesota sits at 17 ahead of Saturday's clash with those Nittany Lions. The Gophers gave head coach P.J. Fleck a new 7-year deal yesterday. It starts next season with a raise to $4.6 million. Fleck's buyout is $10 million for this offseason, then drops to 4.5, then to $3 million. Opening night in college hoops featured the top 4 teams in the country at the Champions Classic at the Garden. Number 1 Michigan State lost to number 2 Kentucky 69-62 after 3rd-ranked Kansas fell to 4th-ranked Duke 68-66. Now, yesterday began with Atlanta Hawks losing forward John Collins to a 25-game PED suspension. It ended with Trae Young's return from last week's sprained ankle, 29 points and 13 assists in a 108-100 home win over the Spurs. It's a 6-game win streak for the Lakers, 118-112 in Chicago, a 5-game run for the Celtics, 119-113 in Cleveland. The Jacksonville Jaguars are going back to Nick Foles now that he's healthy. The Jags are off this week, then he'll start against the Colts. Eagles wide out DeSean Jackson. Titans corner Malcolm Butler went on injured reserve yesterday. And Moose, from hockey last night, the Blues, a 2-1 win in OT in Vancouver. And yes, those Islanders now on a 10-game win streak, a 4-1 victory over Ottawa.
Andrew, well done.
Thank you, Moose. I appreciate
and,
that. See you tomorrow.
You're with us here. Dennis Dodd joins us, covers college football for CBS Sports, does a great job. Hey, Dennis, Mark Malusis, Andrew Bogish with you. Thanks for a couple minutes this morning.
You bet. How are you guys?
We're doing well, Dennis. Always great to chat with you. What do you think about the initial college football rankings?
I thought that the committee did what the human polls couldn't, and that was admit that Ohio State is probably the most complete team in the country, and putting them at number one. LSU clearly has the best schedule and the better wins, but if you see Ohio State play, they are infallible right now. Offense, defense, may have the best player in the country, at least defensively, in Chase Young, with a rookie head coach, by the way. So I thought that was one takeaway.
Yeah, and I agree. And Dennis, you know, we were kind of doing it yesterday, where our predictions would be. And I thought Ohio State would be one based on everything that you just mentioned. I think they are the most complete team. We can get down to schedules and quality wins and the like, but it does come down to the eyeball test, too. When you're watching a team play, I think that does have to factor in, too, when you're looking at it. And I think they've been the most impressive team up until this point as we approach week 11 of the college football season.
Yeah, and people say they haven't played anybody. They do get credit for the Cincinnati win. Cincinnati is now the highest-ranked group of five team in the first rankings. They've played them in Wisconsin and outscored them a combined 80-7. Their schedule strength by the end of the year, I looked at it this morning, if they went out, will be 12th in the country. I use the NCAA barometer. There's a bunch of them you can use, but it would be 12th in the country. So you can't doubt that schedule strength.
Dennis, me and Moose have gone back a bunch on Penn State versus Alabama versus Clemson. I understand why Alabama would be ahead of Clemson, but if Penn State's ahead of Clemson because of resume, shouldn't they also be ahead of Alabama because of resume?
You can make that point. Again, schedule strength, I had current opposition to date, Alabama, 112th in the country. They haven't beaten a currently ranked team. I don't know if the Texas A&M was ranked at the time or not. After that, it's Duke. So, yeah, if you go by that, then what the committee is saying is what I told you about Ohio State, that Alabama looks better than Penn State. And, yeah, that might be true, but that's the way Penn State's going to play. A couple of weeks ago, their quarterback, Sean Clifford, was leading the Big Ten in passing. So they might not be easy on the eyes, and Alabama's now eye candy offensively. But Penn State's pretty darn good. Again, none of this matters. These top four teams are going to play each other as they currently stand. And then, by the way, those may not even be elimination games. We've seen what it looks like with two SEC teams in. Again, schedule strength. I could see two Big Ten teams in there. If Penn State wins out, and Ohio State's sitting there at 11-1, look out.
You know, Dennis, I asked Andrew this question. I'll ask you because I'm curious from your perspective. How deep do you think playoff contention goes in these rankings?
There's a cement ceiling for me after number six, Georgia, because then you've got Oregon, Utah, Oklahoma. All those teams need help. The top six teams control their own destiny. Georgia wins out, they're in. Clemson wins out, they're in. We just discussed the top four. There's a cement ceiling after number six, except for Baylor and Minnesota. Baylor's 12th and Minnesota's 17th, and they're kind of fun little success stories this season. But if they win the rest of their games, and Baylor especially, which has a heck of a chance to do it, then they're in. You know, you're not going to keep a 13-0 Minnesota Big Ten champion out, because it's never happened. A major college champ has never been left out undefeated, at least in this system. It happened in 2004 in old BCS with Auburn. That's why we expanded, frankly, because that can't happen again. And the same for Baylor. They have to play Texas and Oklahoma and back the next 3 weeks for Baylor. At TCU, Oklahoma, Texas at home. And then most likely play Oklahoma in a rematch in the championship game. That's a pretty good accomplishment if they get in. So I would look for them. Those two, again, control their own destiny.
Dennis, my good buddy Mike Yam is the face of the Pac-12 network, and he's a good company guy. So he's banging the drum for that conference. Did Oregon and Utah get the right amount of respect in this initial list?
I thought they did. I don't think they could thought they'd be any higher. You know, Oregon had, I thought, a pretty good win against USC. I know this isn't a good USC team, but to go on the road, that was kind of a trap game for them. And frankly, the loss at USC by Utah earlier in the season is keeping them from being higher. Their schedule strength, the one I figured out yesterday, was 97. And so Oregon clearly is the banner carrier for the Pac-12, but they need chaos above them to happen to get in the top four, and they have to keep winning. As a net gain for the Pac-12 this year, I think it is a net gain. They came out of September with no undefeated teams for the first time in, I think, 32 years. So now they've got two teams in contention. It doesn't look good, but they're still in the running.
We're talking to Dennis Dodd, covers college football for CBS Sports. Dennis, you know, away from the rankings here for a little bit, there's a, you know, let's look ahead to the game. Then there's some obviously coaching scenarios. This weekend, Alabama, LSU, you know, do you think Tua does give it a go for the Tide? If he doesn't, do you think Alabama can still beat LSU if Tua does not play?
Yeah, I think that the second question is the question, you know, we're all thinking about. Can Alabama beat LSU if Tua doesn't play, or it'd be something less than 100%? I think we saw the answer to that question against Clemson last year. He had 22 days between the surgery and the playoff games last year on the other ankle. Beat Oklahoma, but was mobile, throwing off the back foot against Clemson, two interceptions, one for a pick six. And so, I think their chances diminish whatever percentage point Tua is below 100%, or Mac Jones has to play. I think Mac Jones is a gamer. You saw that against Arkansas. They called some plays for him. But Mac Jones is not going to hit that seam with Jerry Jeudy with two defenders hanging on him like Tua will. So that's the question. I mean, I'm writing about that today. Can Alabama win with a Tua at 85%? I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, let me kind of then connect Alabama back to next week's rankings. Let's say Tua plays and he's obviously compromised, or he doesn't play, and they lose. Either way, they lose a tight game. They hang for LSU. They don't get blown out. It's a good showing. It's a good game. How far do you think the committee would actually drop them on the next list?
Well, I think they drop out of the top four, you know, but they and LSU would have the advantage. You know, I, at that point, it's LSU's division to lose. So that gets into the scenario which most benefits the SEC to get two teams in. It's not LSU or Alabama. It's Georgia winning out and beating an undefeated LSU to get two teams in. Georgia would be in, obviously, as SEC champion. But think of LSU as the number two team in the country right now with 13 data points at 12-1. How do you keep them out? You know, you've lost one game all year to Georgia in a championship game in the best conference. So, yeah, Alabama would drop out and would fundamentally be out of it at that point.
Dennis, you know, the other game on the slate, Andrew and I were mentioning earlier on the show that's fascinating, is the Minnesota-Penn State game, which kicks off at high noon. So it leads right into that Alabama-LSU game for a college football fan. Two undefeated teams, two Big Ten teams. You know, Flick has done a great job with that Golden Gopher program, and he gets rewarded with a brand spanking new contract extension through 2026. What do you think? You know, Penn State's certainly impressive, and I think they're the better team. You think Minnesota can hang with Penn State on Saturday?
Oh yeah, yeah, I think they can. This is Minnesota's entire season. You see PJ Fleck, you know, trying to get game day there, and you know he's gotten some players. Now their schedule, they're in that situation where it happens every so often in this age of super conferences. You're going to have a lot of misses. And you're going to get records like this. It happened with Michigan State in 15 going to the playoff. Iowa in 2012, Georgia had a lot of misses. This year, Minnesota misses Michigan State, and Ohio State. Okay, from the East, they play Penn State. This is their season. They have to beat them. Think about this. Okay, let's assume, and yes, they can beat Penn State. Penn State is really, really good, and I think can get to the playoff. But think about this. Nobody's talking about this. If we assume that Ohio State wins out and goes to the playoff, we're essentially talking about Saturday being for a Rose Bowl berth because somebody from the Big Ten has to play there. And Minnesota, even if they lose, Minnesota is two games ahead of both Iowa and Wisconsin as we speak right now. They're probably going to win the West and play Ohio State in the championship game. But think about that. Little old Minnesota having its best season since 1941 in the Rose Bowl.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know what? You're right. Nobody is talking about that. That is great. And you know what? It'd be a credit, to the job that Fleck has done out there. He's done a remarkable job with that Golden Gopher program.
Yeah, I mean, people wanted to ride him for being a self promoter and doing it with gimmicks and row the boat. I tweeted this yesterday because I know him pretty well. I said, look, whatever you think of PJ Fleck, he's taken Western Michigan to the Cotton Bowl. Minnesota, their best season in 78 years, you know, and I just told you their possibilities for the Rose Bowl. And so if you want to hit me with, yeah, but who have they played? Well, who has Alabama played? if you want to go there, now they play a big game Saturday, but I'm not going to take anything away from Minnesota.
Does PJ make sense to you at Florida State, Dennis?
He does. I think, you know, you have to think about that job. Okay, what is the floor there for them? Who are the candidates they can't go beyond, that they can't really sell to the fans? And I think those names are Mike Norvell at Memphis and Mike Leach. I think both of those guys would go. I think right now, at least P.J. Fleck is a hotter name. I think he would go there. I'm not sure. I think he would go there, but not after yesterday with the 7-year contract. He's locked in at least for a while. So take his name off the board. So at the bottom, I go Norvell and Leach and go from there.
Yeah, you know, I guess, you know, I mean, you know, and that's going to be all the rumblings out there for Florida State. You mentioned Norvell and Leach. What are, you know, I guess where else are the Seminoles going to go here? And do you think Willie Taggart, do you think 21 games down there for him was enough for Willie Taggart?
Yeah, I mean, something's wrong there, and it's beyond everything. It's talent, it's coaching, it's the administration, it's everything. You know, as recently as September, they were still blaming all this on Jimbo Fisher for lacking academic scores. He left a covered bear, blah blah blah. Well, at some point, you know, you're Florida State, and you have to turn the corner. And what got them was they had terrible attendance for the Miami game on Saturday. And, you know, that'll do it, you know, for anybody when apathy strikes. So that's what's happening there. We shall see.
Dennis, final one for me, and that is, you know, closer to where Andrew and I are broadcasting from, and that is New York City and in the Big Ten. You know, Rutgers is looking for a new head coach. There's a name out there, Greg Schiano, that seems to gain a lot of heat. We know, you know, obviously in the NFL, had a lot of success there initially before Bolton for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Do you think, and Rutgers got a lot of other issues going on for their athletic director, Pat Hobbs, right now, but do you think Greg Schiano and a Rutgers marriage or a remarriage is something that's going to definitely happen?
Yeah, it looks like it's going to happen. I mean, who else is out there that knows more about Rutgers and has a proven track record that can do it? I mean, he's the only guy that has had success there in the last, I don't know what, 50 years? And wants to get back into the game, and after all that crap he went through at Tennessee, you know, good for him to get another chance. I think he is one of the few guys on the planet that can get them back to relevance. Playing in the Big Ten East, having to play Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State every year is going to be tough. And it underscores for the Big Ten that, you know, look, Maryland and Rutgers really were warm bodies. Jim Delaney whiffed on his desire to get either. He wanted to get some combination of these two out of three, Virginia, Georgia Tech, North Carolina. He whiffed on that. He settled for Rutgers and Maryland. That's not looking very good right now.
No, it's not. Hey, Dennis, we appreciate the time this morning. We really do. Have yourself a wonderful Wednesday, and we'll chat again soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
You got it.
Thanks, Dennis
Dodd, college football writer for CBSSports.com. He does a very, very good job. He really does. And interesting, we'll see if that, a lot of people think maybe Schiano, that deal gets done this week.
Well, you know, I could have asked Dennis the timeline of Florida State, too, because they again said yesterday, AD, that they want to hire someone by the end of this month, which would seem to say that they're not hiring a guy who has a job right now.
Right, because isn't the early signing period in early December?
Right, but like everyone has a game through November, the last weekend of November,
right.
And then maybe conference championship game. So even before you get to PJ Fleck's buyout, which is now $10 million in Minnesota, is he going to take the Florida State job in the middle of a historic Gopher season?
I have a hard time envisioning
exactly.
That. Yeah. It's Mark Melusis, Andrew Bogish, Taz and the Moose on this Wednesday morning. We'll come back. We got the undercard for you. CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. You're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Time to answer our Ask the Pros question of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Today's question is from Bob down in Kentucky. Will we ever see Minshew Mania again? Don't forget, you can submit a question by going to CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service. Wear O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every single day. So, Gardner Minshew Mania, are we ever going to see it again down in Jacksonville with the Jaguars? And if you didn't see the report yesterday, not the report, but really the announcement by the Jaguars that Nick Foles is back and will be starting for the Jacksonville Jaguars moving forward over his broken, clavicle, collarbone that he suffered the opening week when they took on the Kansas City Chiefs. Will we ever see it again? I think Gardner Minshew showed himself capable of being a starting quarterback in the NFL. I think there's things to work on. I don't think you've seen the last day of him being a starting quarterback in the NFL by any stretch.
If I was the Jaguars and Nick Foles finishes this season strongly, I would see if I could hoodwink somebody into trading me something good for Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, I could see that.
And I thought the decision to go back to Foles was the decision to make before Minshew kind of wet himself in the fourth quarter last week. I mean, it was ugly. Two picks and two fumbles against the Texans in London. And it was like the old school announcer's jinx. They brought up the fact that this decision was looming on the Fox crew, and then immediately he started giving the ball away as if he heard them talking about it and was like, oh, man, I'm playing for my job. And then just fell apart. But even before that, I thought you had to go back to Foles because Minshew's been fun and he's been good.
Yeah.
But I mean, they were 4-3 entering the game. It wasn't like they were 7-1 and he was throwing for 350 and three scores every weekend. I thought you had to go back to Foles, who you just gave 4 years and like $80 million to. So if I'm comfortable with Foles, I might see if that mania went somewhere else and somebody wants to overpay me for Gardner, and then I'll just sign a veteran to stand behind Foles.
Don't disagree. I thought when Foles was healthy, he was going to play regardless of the success, and Minshew had some success as the Jaguars starting quarterback. But I thought, you know, it was his franchise. It was his team. They paid him. I think he's earned it. Plus, I think he's a really good quarterback, and he showed that in Philadelphia. Now, the consistency with Nick Foles hasn't exactly gone hand-to-hand, but I agree. If I'm the Jacksonville Jaguars, looking to maybe add some quality talent to the team, maybe find Gardner Minshew, maybe find a team to be able to bite on that carrot after the season and give up something for Minshew, a guy that you didn't invest all that much in any way, shape, or form. All right, let's get to it. Here we go, the undercard.
Taz and the Moose present the Undercard. The stories from today's rundown that we haven't talked about on the show.
All right, Mike, what do we got, buddy?
Let's hypothetically say the Chargers did move out to London.
Mm-hmm.
What should they be renamed?
Ooh. Oh, nothing. I'd be the Chargers. You can't take the uniforms out. Then don't move. I mean, you can't not have the Chargers. They've got to be the Chargers. The London Chargers.
The Bloody Chargers. You can't change their name. They can't. They have to be the Chargers.
That's how you need those baby blues.
That's how you sell them. That's how you sell it. You can't change them.
Yeah,
put them back in San Diego, by the way.
I don't disagree with that. But if they happen to move to London, No, it just has the Jacksonville
Charges. That's not an English accent.
Say if the Jaguars. No, that's just terrible. Say if the Jaguars moved to London, they'd be the Jaguars. Or, as some people pronounce it, the Jaguars.
Kurt Warner was all day Sunday morning.
The Jaguars.
Like somebody getting his ear on NFL Network. It's not the Jaguars.
Yeah, why is that?
Why do
people mispronounce that? Because I've heard other people do it. It's the Jaguars.
It's the Jaguars. Now, I
know I have a distinct kind of like New York kind of a feel, but I mean, it's the Jaguars. It's not the Jaguars.
No, but like the car commercial, do they say like Jaguar? Do people like
Jaguar
bastardize that kind of different accent on it? I don't know how
you're right, but this is not a $95,000 vehicle.
No.
It's not a Jaguar.
There are also folks that call them the Bengals, not the Bengals. So there's all
Bengals.
It's a battle. It's not an A. It's an E. They're not the Bengals. They're not bracelets. They're Bengals.
Bengals.
Bengals. Yeah, you're right.
Right.
You're good. Others
you pronounce it, Pete. How do you pronounce Jaguars?
Jaguar.
Like a gentleman.
Jaguars.
Thank you,
Mike. Bilotti, you're a teacher, adjunct professor. Why do you think people pronounce it Jaguars?
I think people are lazy, that's why.
Lazy. All right.
Okay. All right, Mike, next.
I can't believe they just did that. Wow.
36 years ago today, Will Byers disappeared. That's a reference to Stranger Things. Today is Stranger Things Day. You watch the show?
I do watch
the
show.
Will Byers?
He's the boy that was taken into the upside down in Stranger Things.
Wait, today is Stranger Things Day?
Day 36 years ago, Will Byers on the show disappeared. Technically, the show's only been out like for 4 years.
So. Right.
But 36 years ago today is the day that he disappeared.
Fictionally.
Right. 36 years ago today, and Stranger Things is in the future?
Stranger Things came out 4 years ago. In the first episode, Will Byers goes missing. It takes place 36 years ago today. With all of that said, do you watch the show Stranger Things?
I do watch it,
which
Mike. Thanks for asking.
And Moose doesn't, based on my question.
I do not. I've not. I've heard nothing but good things about it.
I've been alarmed because my daughter, who is 8 going on 9, wants to watch it, and I've already seen it, and there's no way she'd be allowed to watch it because they curse, it's scary, there's monsters, there's blood, and like half her third grade class has already watched it, and I want to know who their parents are that are letting these kids watch a show that is like basically somewhere between PG-13 and R.
Yeah, I don't want to get there, man.
Come on now.
I don't want to get there at all. I don't want my kids.
People.
I don't want my kids to grow up. I like Naps. I like watching Spirit, the horse. I like watching PJ Masks. I like watching all that
stuff. We've officially, even with my 6-year-old, 5-year-old, almost 6, we've graduated now to a lot of real people, real actors. Fewer and fewer cartoons.
Oh.
Yeah. That's, Fuller House is hot in my house right now.
Fuller House, there you go.
But even that's a little too risque. They talk about SEX in that show.
Mike, how will you be celebrating Stranger Things Day?
I will not be doing anything.
Delivering food.
Yeah, that.
To people having viewing parties.
All right, next.
Ooh,
Zion Williamson did not play last night for Duke. He's in the NBA now.
Yes.
Are you excited that the college basketball season won't all be about Zion and actually about all the other teams and everything and every other possible storyline?
I got to be honest with you. I was a little strange watching Duke take on Kansas last night. First off, it's tough watching Kansas knowing basically like they're facing like expulsion.
Exactly.
Their basketball program is facing like expulsion.
But shuttered.
But Bill Self looks no worse for the wear. He looks great on the sideline. It's strange watching Duke and not seeing people basically fawn over Zion Williamson.
No, but it was so much easier last year. All you had to know was Zion. Now you got to know all of these
different teams and players
and the amount of prep work has gone through the roof all of a sudden.
Bogus, good job, brother.
Thank you, Moose.
Mike, Pete, great job across the way. Thanks to everyone that called and tuned in and listened throughout the course of the morning. We certainly appreciate that. Taz and the Moose, we out. Peace!
There's got to be a 10-second runoff here.